You're listening to The Vitals, a twice-monthly podcast for everything oncology nursing. For even more content, head over to oncnursingnews.com. Hi everyone, I'm Brielle Bennion, Senior Editor at Oncology Nursing News. For today's episode, we'll be talking with Dr. Brian Sisk, an Assistant Professor of Pediatric Hematology and Oncology at the Washington University School of Medicine. Sisk recently conducted research on communication barriers between cancer clinicians and pediatric patients and their families. So just to get started, can you tell me a little bit about your study with barriers to communication with pediatric oncology patients and why this was an important study to conduct?
We know from a lot of studies that communication is really important for families. We know it can increase families feeling that they're engaged in an important part of their child's care. It can improve access to care. It can improve the quality of treatment. It can even improve, you know, children's quality of life. So there's a lot of reasons why communication really matters. What I recognized is that the studies that look at how communication fails seemed to focus on people not trying hard enough to communicate. And as I thought about the literature, I realized there's a lot of other things that get in the way of communication. We wanted to talk to a broad group of different clinicians to understand from their perspective what makes it hard to communicate the way that they want to with families. And that's where we did these focus groups. We did focus groups with oncology doctors, nurse practitioners, nurses, and then a collection of psychosocial support professionals, including social workers, child life specialists, psychologists. And we asked them open questions about what does communication mean for you? What makes it harder to do? What gets in the way? And that's where we got all of our information from the study.
So what were people saying were some of these barriers to communication that they were facing?
Yeah, there were a lot of personal things, like if your personality doesn't match with the family, if you're worried about causing, you know, angst to the family, if you're not sure exactly what the family wants or needs, those are all issues. Language barriers were issues on kind of that personal level, but we also saw that there were barriers at these different levels, like team-related barriers, where, for example, some nurse practitioners talked about not knowing exactly what their role or authority was to give certain types of information. You know, for example, a nurse practitioner said, I don't think families want to hear that their child has cancer from a nurse practitioner. I think that, you know, that depends on your team, but that probably is going to be from the doctor. There were other issues related to team issues where it was hard to know what everybody on the team was telling the family. It was hard for this specialist team to talk with the primary oncology team and have a unified message. But what I thought was really interesting is there were also really higher level barriers, like issues with the reputation of that hospital in the community that the family comes from and how that affected, even before the clinician interacted with the parents, how that affected communication. There were policy level issues related to informed consent. So there's a lot of rules and regulations about how informed consent happens. And in complying with those rules and regulations, it often felt like the clinicians were rushing parents or needing to, you know, churn through really complex informed consent documents that didn't seem to meet their needs.
Yeah, that's a great point. I know that a lot of clinicians, that's something I hear frequently, is that they're really, really pressed for time. And, you know, a cancer diagnosis, there is so much information that you have to digest and, you know, explain to the patient and the family. So what kind of solutions can we have, or what are some next steps forward that might have come from your findings?
Yeah. Absolutely. I think there's a lot of ideas about how we can move forward. I'll step back and say one of the biggest limitations in the field of communication research in pediatric cancer is we haven't studied hardly any interventions. We've done a lot of describing problems, which is really important, but we haven't developed a lot of interventions and tools to try to fix the problems yet. And I think that's really the next step. And what this is useful for is giving us guidance of what we should be targeting. And I think depending on each level can give us insights into what type of a tool we need to make. We talked about policy. So maybe if there's these widely recognized challenges with informed consent, maybe we need to develop an intervention where we test a staged consent process where there's clear guidelines for what should happen at each stage. It gives parents a chance to adjust to their child's diagnosis before having to consent to a study. Issues with collaborating hospitals, that's something we didn't talk about, especially for families that live in rural areas. Figuring out ways to improve education, improve sharing of resources between primary cancer hospitals and community hospitals, especially emergency departments, to make sure that there's clear understanding of the children's healthcare needs, understanding of the capabilities and limitations of the local facilities, and having a shared mental model of how these kids need care. I think there's a lot of different things, even in the team-based issues. If you think about something like prognostic communication, telling parents and the child about chances of cure, chances of relapse, finding out ways to get rid of the bottleneck where only one person can give a vital piece of information. So that might be interventions that work on team dynamics by making sure that there's a shared authority where everyone knows what the prognosis is and knows who has the capacity and the kind of recognition and shared authority within the group to share that information. I think there's a lot of different things that we can do moving forward, but we need to study them rigorously.
So are these issues, it sounds like some of them are really broad in the cancer sense, it's not just pediatric oncology. Are there some that are specific to childhood cancer that might be different when you're communicating with adults about their own diagnoses?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think there's two things that come to mind. The first that's different is the role of the child. And when a child is very young, engaging a 3 or 4 year old is very different than engaging a 17 year old. And not every 17 year old wants the same amount of participation. So I think that's the real challenge in pediatrics compared to adult, is understanding the needs that might not be the same for the parents and the child, understanding how development changes. And some of these are long treatments. So what a child needs when they're 14, when they're diagnosed with leukemia, versus 17, when they're going into survivorship, their needs, their expectations, all of that might change. So I think that's one of the really unique and big challenges in pediatrics. The other interesting challenge in pediatrics versus adults, I think, relates to decision-making. Pediatrics is a very protocol-driven field. And for most cancer diagnoses, there's going to be a standard of care or maybe two treatments to choose from. And usually the big decision is, do I do a clinical trial or do I do the standard of care? And usually the clinical trial is the standard of care with one small modification. Whereas if you're an adult and you develop breast cancer, colon cancer, something like that, there might be 5 different types of treatments that you have to really navigate through and figure out what's going to work with your family and resources, your support structure, your job, your past medical history. In pediatrics, the decisions are, there's not as many upfront decisions about the type of treatment, but there's a lot more decisions about how are we going to leverage quality of life, how are we going to navigate needing to have a parent here with our 3 or 4 year old because we don't want to leave them at the hospital. So there's a very different mix of decisions and support needs.